Welcome to another episode of How Did So-Called Progressive Politics Become So Regressive? The podcast that says it's okay to believe in free speech and democracy, and it's also okay to disagree with leftist populist ideologies. This episode is called The Madness of Me Too, Part 1. Today, I will explain why I believe that the Me Too movement has been regressive for society and for women. Rather than promoting women's rights, it has ignored women's rights. Me Too has empowered angry, divisive protest politics and promoted propaganda that has undermined what makes a happy, healthy society. Me Too has also achieved the seemingly impossible by repopularizing the totalitarianism of the McCarthy era. And this new age destructive philosophy has proved so successful for empowering marginalized views that it has set the tone for BLM and the gender diversity movement to use the same strategy with disastrous consequences for society. And disastrous is not an exaggeration, because reasonable political discussion has been reduced to a toxic wasteland. Any honest person would have to admit that 10 years ago, we could all have rational political discussions. Some people were more left, some people were more right, whatever that actually means. But now we see an angry, divided society, and nobody can engage positively. So I'll need to address all of those issues and explain why they've happened. So positive engagement is the only thing that brings human beings together. So any system that has destroyed the fabric of reasonable dialogue is bad for humanity and detrimental for finding reasonable solutions to difficult political issues. By creating a number of adversarial and divisive narratives, Me Too has been at the forefront of launching political approaches that encourage totalitarianism, intolerance of diversity of opinion, and encouraged new forms of xenophobia. We have seen the empowerment of the cancel culture, which I have already explained is very much in opposition to healthy democratic principles and poisonous to a fair and equal society. So let me start with my first claim that Me Too has not shown much interest in women's rights. While it is deplorable when movie producers and directors use the so-called casting couch, I'm not certain that actresses willingly sleeping with directors to achieve fame and multi-million dollar movie parts is the greatest global issue for women's rights. Me Too has been silent on the appalling lack of equality and fairness suffered by many female populations in the Middle East and Africa. Once again, the narrative of how awful Western democracy is has been their major focus. And this ignores the fact that Western democracies have the greatest modern human rights record of empowering women, making them presidents, CEOs, and giving them human rights. Perhaps Me Too might have concerned itself with the approximately 27 million women in Egypt who have suffered female genital mutilation, or the multitude of countries that do not provide any protection for women against sexual crimes. There has been a number of women's groups that have come forward to protest genuine human rights women's issues, but Me Too has quite literally dismissed them. So if Me Too is so concerned with women's rights, why are they so silent about genuine women's rights abuse? We haven't heard a whisper out of Me Too about the Iranian women executed for campaigning for women's rights in Iran. Now, feminism in its original form set out with some incredibly important principles that we should all agree on: promoting equality for women and creating a society that does not discriminate based on gender. There's no question that women have suffered a great deal through history, and they have certainly been disadvantaged in most societies. Furthermore, they have suffered generalized sexual harassment, and they have often been forced to submit to being male sex objects. However, I believe that modern feminism has lost its way. It seems that the significant achievement of gains for female equality in the last few decades in the modern West has forced feminists to become more extreme to remain relevant, because in truth, Western society has achieved great gains in women's rights already. So we're already seeing women presidents, CEOs, women dominate social sciences. In most Western societies, they have the majority of medical school entrants, And in Western law, we already have strict prohibition of sexual harassment and rape. So what is there left to fight for? It's small margins. Of course, there are still many men who harass women, and there are rapes that do occur. There are men's clubs that give favorable employment to other men. However, these issues are becoming far more individual and less systemic, and they're also less extreme. So an obvious place to start is what a civil rights movement should be trying to achieve, and that's easy: a united, peaceful society that is equal and fair. Unfortunately, populist ideologies have achieved the opposite. So that's an important point to make, is whoever wants to support these politics, the question is, have they made the world a better place? And the answer is clearly no. We are a very angry, divided society, so these politics are simply not working in the real world. So they've used adversarial narratives to stimulate anger, division, and conflict. Instead of bringing men and women together, Me Too has sown division and created toxic propaganda to poison male-female heterosexual relationships. Instead of promoting happiness, Me Too has cancelled it. Everyone is angry all the time. Instead of promoting a healthy society, Me Too has cancelled that as well. Even the name Me Too is a promotion of self-important narcissism. And when you think about it, what we really want is a united society, which is not all about Me Too, but about all of us. Hashtag Men Too. Me Too set the tone for regressive, anti-democratic ideas, totalitarianism, and cancel culture. And I'll go into all of that in detail. So before we get to the specifics, let me explain what has actually gone wrong, the etiology of the situation. So the first thing is that any propaganda movement must stimulate anger, because anger is the most powerful motivator and recruiter. It makes for newsworthy sensationalism, and once people become angry, they will no longer listen to reason. And therefore, the propaganda is empowered. However, this is the obvious tragedy of all these modern populist movements, because when your motivation is to create anger and division, and your momentum relies on the maintenance of these negative emotions, then your effect on society cannot be positive. In fact, these movements cannot afford to promote any positivity, because that will kill off their own movements, which rely on the assumption that everyone is innately xenophobic and against them. Now you start to see why anyone who challenges these ideologies is labeled a sexist, racist, bigoted, transphobe. This is at the heart of what is being promoted, and these movements rely entirely on this mentality to remain alive and relevant. Because if people stop being angry and start talking rationally again, then many will discover that most white people are not racist. Many men are kind, caring fathers and husbands, and not sexist at all. And that most people don't care whether people are straight, gay, or trans. What will they be left to fight about if we are all on the same side? To prevent this from happening, to prevent reasonable engagement, Me Too and subsequent radical movements created a definition for sexism, racism, and transphobia that is so narrow that you cannot disagree with a single thing. Even an obvious fact that you state will have you labeled a racist, sexist, bigoted, transphobe. This makes dialogue impossible. On one side, people are offended because their reasonable attempts to engage are rebuffed, and they know that they are not bigoted at all. On the other side, the minorities are brainwashed that everyone is against them, since they are propagandized that any opposition to their self-centered mindset is hate speech. They are constantly triggered and angry, and they see hatred in every shadow. Now that these movements have created these narrow definitions, they can call any disagreement discrimination and hate speech. This is totalitarianism, and it's divisive. It presumes that their ideology is absolutely perfect in every way, and it creates a moral imperative for their followers to cancel and crush any opposition because they believe they are fighting against evil xenophobia all the time. Of course, many who oppose them are actually supporting freedom of speech and basic democratic principles and don't feel wonderful about being accused of being nefarious. So a political civil war has been created unnecessarily by using such narrow definitions of xenophobia and by casting disagreement as discrimination. Let me pause here to state that there are evil right-wing philosophies that promote bigotry and xenophobia, but it isn't reasonable to assume that any conservative view makes someone a neo-Nazi. There are many conservative people who are moderates, and it's not healthy or conducive to a united, peaceful society to radicalize everyone or presume everyone to be a radical. They don't agree with you, yes, but that doesn't make them a radical. Perhaps you're the radical. But let's get back to our main subject, Me Too. In its quest to create unnecessary anger and resentment, Me Too popularized the idea of equality of outcome, which is really about the politics of envy. Equality of outcome is an unfair measure because it presumes equality of the ability of participants. The reason meritocracy is the fairest system is because it enables people to earn achievement based on performance and hard work, not on any racial or gender bias. So generally, a fair society aims to create equality of opportunity, not equality of outcome. Furthermore, since society depends on productivity, equality of outcome predetermines poorer outcomes because you are not selecting the best, you're not selecting on merit, and therefore it's bad for overall societal productivity and achievement. So when it came to equality of pay, since there are biological differences between men and women, Me Too had to cancel these or the propaganda could not work. If they had admitted that many women choose to stay at home and care for their families and children, then unequal pay may sometimes be due to biological differences and women's choices. Hence, we had cancellation of all the ways that men and women are different. Pregnancy, breastfeeding, nurturing young children were taken out of the equation and recast as a sexist conspiracy against women. We also couldn't be allowed to accept that men are stronger and more athletic, because this might explain why people prefer watching men's soccer and why the men are higher paid. So Me Too popularized propaganda that canceled inconvenient biological facts. If someone stated the obvious that men are generally stronger than women, they were called a sexist. This led to cancellation of gender. So if, for example, if we accept that male professional soccer players are much better than their female counterparts in their soccer ability, and therefore more people want to watch them play, then that is the reason they earn more money. This kind of rationality creates a problem for equality of outcome. The problem is that the male game generates an enormous amount of income compared to the women's game. For example, the recent Men's Soccer World Cup generated around $7.4 billion compared to $0.5 for the women. In fact, the women were paid a higher percentage of total income for their event. So you could argue that it was the men who were treated unfairly because their administrators benefited more from their labor than the players. Now, the equation of equal pay is impossible because it would either mean not rewarding the men for the massive income that they generate, and that would lead to them rebelling and starting an alternative competition where they could reap the benefits of their labor, or paying women so much that it would bankrupt the women's game. So what do we do with this? Do we ban men's professional soccer to punish them for earning so much? Do we make men's professional clubs sponsor women's soccer, which would be impossible because these clubs are independent corporate entities? So that's unworkable. But an important point, there are 4 billion women in the world. So there's not a lack of a support base for women's soccer. If women want to watch soccer, there's no conspiracy against them. They can watch women's soccer and support it. You can't force men to watch women's soccer any more than you can force women to watch men's soccer. And you can't force people to watch a game that is inferior in quality if they want to watch the higher quality men's game. And let's face it, the women's U.S. national soccer team lost to a group of teenage boys, so there's no question about the disparity in quality. It's all a matter of preference, and people are free to choose to support and pay money and watch whatever game they want to watch. It's not a moral issue. That's how capitalism and free choice work. So instead of something positive, promoting and investing in women's soccer, Me Too rather creates these divisive ideas which are based on the politics of envy. Because they don't object to this problem generally as a concept. There's no objection in Australia to the fact that over 70% of medical school entrants are female. That would be unfair to men. No one around the world objects to the female dominance of social sciences or the fact that women models are paid more than their male counterparts. So there is a lack of consistency when it comes to equality of outcome. We are not interested in the facts, but just the negative, divisive narrative. To defeat logic and rationality, Me Too promoted the idea that there are no differences between men and women. It is obvious and factual that men are generally bigger and stronger than women because they are designed to be hunters and protectors of our species, and it has nothing to do with societal sexism. It's just a genetic and biological fact. Of course, there are exceptions, but the rule generally applies. So the way Me Too dealt with this issue was to cancel biological and genetic facts in favor of a negative, unhealthy narrative that I'll explain later. They combated any opposition by accusing anyone who cited male and female biological differences as being a sexist. Anyone who opposed them with facts and scientific evidence was threatened and targeted. This has knocked onto current gender ideology and conflict. However, let me point out at this juncture that in any given year, in many athletics events, there are around 1,500 to 15,000 men who break an all-time women's world record. In tennis, two of the greatest women's tennis players who ever lived, Serena and Venus Williams, famously claimed that they could defeat any man outside the top 200. So they were challenged by the number 203 in the world, Carsten Brasch. He made a big show of it in front of the press. He went out to play a round of golf. He came back to the club and had a few drinks. And then he walked onto court and thrashed them both. 6-1 against Serena, 6-2 against Venus. And afterwards, he said he was messing around and playing like the number 500 man in the world. So the point is that there is a good reason why we have women's sport. Now, within this narrative of equality of outcome, there is also presumption of sexism. Anytime there is a gender pay gap or difference in outcome between men and women, this can only be due to sexism, according to this propaganda. Of course, there are a multitude of factors that lead to disparity of outcome. In the workplace, many women earn less because they work fewer hours. This is because the female biological urge to fall pregnant and have babies is powerful. Many women earn less because of their choice to stay home with their children, which some may argue is good for families and society. Notwithstanding the individual nature of marriage and assigned gender roles, which is very personal, many women progress slower up the corporate ladder because they take years off to look after children or work part-time. And in many cases, this has nothing to do with gender roles or sexism, but their own choices. To combat this, Me Too promoted the propaganda that women who want to have children and spend more time at home are betraying their gender or being forced to do so by a sexist society. This is a terrible indictment on feminism, which is supposed to be about giving women the opportunity to make choices to make themselves happy. Now, all species are designed to survive. Women are designed to fall pregnant, breastfeed, and nurture their young, and they have specialized emotional, physical, and cognitive equipment to achieve this. Otherwise, humanity couldn't survive. Since Me Too could not admit that men and women have biological differences, they claimed sexism when anyone stated this obvious biological fact. Nature encourages survival by generating existential pleasure when we perform survival activities. So many cats love sharpening their claws, dogs love chewing bones, because these activities encourage survival, and nature rewards these creatures with pleasure to encourage them to survive. Likewise, humans enjoy survival activities like eating, sex, and even the relief of ablutions, because they are all necessities for survival. Most women derive existential pleasure from having babies and caring for them. This has nothing to do with sexism, but rather their innate biological and genetic design. So discouraging women from doing something that they are designed to do and that makes them happy is not of benefit to women. We can sacrifice the happiness and well-being of women and their families in favor of pursuing the impossible, equality of outcome. Women who don't want to have babies or want their husbands to stay at home are entitled to make their own choices. We want a society that creates equality of choices for these women rather than judging them. And sadly, nowadays, we have the opposite. women who choose to stay at home with their children, which is something very valuable, feel very judged and that they're not worthwhile people because they're not out there earning money. And women who go to work and don't spend as much time with their families also feel judged. So women are the losers in this equation, no matter what they do. And I just want to make a really important point here. We have created a society that actually discourages female happiness because women are not allowed to feel happy whatever choice they make. And since most children depend on their mothers for physical and mental well-being, I question why a society would encourage the belief that making money is more important than taking care of children. Is it really more important for women to become CEOs than be great mothers? Which role has more impact on the happiness and well-being of children and society? This becomes a matter of values, not morals. Women should have the right to choose either, and internal marital matters about gender roles are personal and between a husband and wife. It's not for us to judge other people, and it's not for society to judge the choices that each couple makes to make them happy. I would also argue that one of the best ways to promote sexual respect for women is the promotion of positive motherhood. Boys who have strong female role models are more likely to respect women, and boys who have attentive, loving mothers are much less likely to be antisocial and mistreat women. In my opinion, canceling motherhood and denigrating it is to the disadvantage of respect for women in society, since men get that largely from their homes and from their upbringing. In pursuit of the narrative that men are responsible for all of the historical outcome differences between men and women, Me Too had to cancel the biology of gender, because prior to modernity, women did not have access to reliable contraception, baby formulas, or even sanitary products. Due to their biology, many adult women spent much of their adult lives menstruating, pregnant, or breastfeeding. This was certainly disadvantageous to female career advancement, but until very recently, humanity simply did not have the technology to change this equation. So when everything is written off as sexism and the toxic patriarchy, understand that this ignores reality, fact, and perspective. So join me for part two when I'll be talking about the harmful effects of toxic feminism. If you enjoyed this podcast, please feel free to follow me and share it with your friends. And join me for the next episode of How Did So-Called Progressive Politics Become So Regressive? Please note that the views and opinions on this show are my own and do not reflect those of my colleagues or employers.